The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Klapo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish. It's another episode. I'm Dr. Josh Klapo along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. Alex, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. We are in a place of disruption. Today, we are actually, the three of us, myself, you, and Jamie, our producer, are actually in three different places. And I was thinking about it. We are adapting. I've actually got a new microphone, Alex, that I have no idea how to use. so I'm doing my best. I've asked Jamie 17 times if it sounds okay. I'm not in a closet, so I can't make that work. You and I were going back and forth, and you know, we love in this show to weave in rock into business, technology and innovation, strategy, et cetera, and the idea of disruption. And I was thinking about this when you brought this topic up, because we're constantly, particularly pre-pandemic, everybody was talking about being a disruptor. And I know from coming from academics, I didn't exactly understand what that meant in the marketplace, because it sounded like a bad thing. But what I was thinking for over the last 2 years is, how do you become a disruptor, or how do you be a disruptor when we're in a constant state of disruption? Like, things are all over the place. And does it make it even a good idea to be trying to be a disruptor, or should we be constantly adapting? So, like, maybe let's start with that. And we can talk about the rock themes, because I'm already thinking of them. But help me understand how we become, or how, or should we be disruptors in a state when there is disruption everywhere?
Yeah, you know, and you're bringing up a great topic, Dr. Josh. I mean, when you think about this,
thank you, Dr. Alex.
I think the conventional wisdom would say no, right? I mean, if the world is being disrupted around you, maybe that's not the best time in the world to go out and try to be a disruptor yourself. So I think that's one school of thought, right? All of your capabilities and all of your people and all of your processes and systems or everything, they're going to be sort of naturally programmed to be reacting to these disruptions in the marketplace. And so, you know, and so I think it varies a lot by the type of company, the size of the company, and the sort of history and culture of the company that you're talking about, right? I think when you're dealing with big companies, and those are a lot of the companies that we deal with at Adaptogen. You know, we deal with global 2000 companies, and you know, they spent a lot of time over the last 2 years just reacting to the disruptions in the marketplace. So if you go look at big airlines, we have a couple of big airlines that are customers of ours. You look at manufacturers with all the supply chain challenges that they've seen. You look at higher education institutions, colleges and universities trying to deal with, wow, what do I do about student enrollment and virtual learning and all of that stuff? You know, so I think one of the challenges is that when you are in a situation in the marketplace where it's being disrupted, it's tough to go out there and say, well, we're also going to allocate additional resources to going out and being a disruptor. So I think that's kind of the conventional wisdom. Now, as smaller companies, I think smaller companies have the advantage to potentially go out and say, well, we're not being disrupted by this as much. Let's go find some opportunities in the marketplace to actually be a disruptor during this, while this other disruption is happening. So I think it varies a lot by sort of the type of company that you're dealing with and how much you're impacted by the disruption. But I would argue that the conventional wisdom that says, no, just focus your efforts on reacting rather than focusing on proactive disruption during a disruption that's happening in the marketplace, I think that conventional wisdom is probably wrong, because the capabilities that you need to react to a disruption and the capabilities you need to create a disruption, I think, are very, very different.
So let's weave into some of the music themes here, because as you're talking, I'm thinking, all right, let's think about other times where there's sort of been environmental disruption, and where did music come in? I mean, instantly I'm thinking about things like war, whether it's here or abroad. And again, you know, you think about everything from anti-war songs and protests to just changes in music. I know we've talked about Genesis, or I'm sorry, we'll talk about Genesis, but The Police, for example, right? Coming in with synthesizers during a classic rock sort of experience. Is it possible to say, and I don't know if we're just playing with semantics, that in a time of, I don't know that this is chaos, but in a time of disruption, learning how to solve the problem, how to adapt, you actually are a disruptor because there's less steady state. So is there more opportunity to experiment with business solutions? Again, like rockers have done, whether it's bringing in, you know, mashing up hip hop and rock, to experimenting with synthesizers and, you know, reverb and all that kind of stuff. I mean, are we in actually a better position as businesses right now to kind of be disruptors by looking for creative ways to adapt? That's a lot of words. I'm sorry, but what do you think? I don't know if I've just confused myself or not, but does that make sense?
Well, no, it does. And so let's think about the music industry, right? I mean, the biggest disruption in the music industry, when you look at the whole industry over the last, well, probably ever, has been this idea of digital music and digital downloads, right? Great so point. Remember back in sort of the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, we had the Napsters of the world come out and you had all of this, you know, people stealing music and copying music. And then finally, some people came along and said, wait, this is crazy. We can't keep doing this. It'll destroy the music industry. So you saw things like iTunes come out and now you've got Spotify and Amazon Music and all that, right? So I think that was probably the biggest disruption in the music industry, maybe in the history of music, at least from a business model standpoint and from a, you know, just from an economic standpoint. And you know, I think the industry was kind of on a precipice there. If the whole free downloads or people stealing music had continued, the economic incentive goes away for people to create new music and new bands to come into the marketplace, right? They're taking huge risks, but if the rewards aren't there, then, you know, you wonder how many people would go into it and produce the same quantity and quality of music that we've seen over the last however many years. So I think that's a great example of a situation where people had to adapt. People had to adapt to this huge disruption in the marketplace. And, you know, there's people that would argue that no, actually it was better before with the record companies kind of running everything and not having to worry about digital rights and people stealing music and so on and so forth. And then I think you'd have people argue that, no, this has actually changed the game completely. Right. Because now as a band or as a musician, you know, I can go out there and self-publish a lot of my music. Right. I don't need this sort of heavy-handed record company that gets to decide who the winners and losers are really before anything, you know, goes to market, because that's the way it was back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, for the most part. Right. It was all run by the record companies. So there's been this big shift of power from the record companies to the artists. And I think a lot of people would argue that, hey, that was an interesting disruption. And the artists that have managed to take advantage of that disruption have been fairly successful at it, right? The artists that kind of said, no, I'm not going to do that, whatever, they've seen their routes to market go away in a lot of places. So I think you're right. I mean, I think you have to adapt to these disruptions in the marketplace. We see it in the music industry. We see it in just about every industry, really. You think about how companies have to react and adapt to changing circumstances again. And you pointed out, right, it could be wars, it could be volcanic eruptions or earthquakes, mm-hmm. or it could be, you know, pandemics. There's always going to be something that's going to happen that's going to disrupt the marketplace. And so from a reactive standpoint, you know, you have to be in a position where you can quickly adapt. And I think that's the hardest part, is being able to know what you're going to do if something does happen, or at least have a pretty good idea of what you're going to do, and be able to put that strategy and that adaptation in place very quickly before your competitors can do it. That can give you a pretty significant market advantage.
So let's break down the idea of disruptor. I've never liked it. I mean, I understand the purpose, I think, but I keep thinking again, a lot of times disruptor is, you know, we're going to do things differently and we're going to change the way it is. And it's almost like it has this feeling like, you know, we're going to play louder, or there's going to be, it's going to be edgier, or it's going to be something that nobody's ever heard. And, you know, it's almost, you get almost this kind of like a group think, we get all excited about how we're going to do things differently. And sometimes, you know, frankly, the music sucks, right? It sounds terrible. Or in the marketplace, you get so caught up on, we're going to be a disruptor. Talk a little bit about where technology, software, if you will, allows us to move things forward in an innovative way, but like still sound good or deliver good and not just become this like mess because we're self-proclaimed disruptors.
Well, yeah. And I think that your comment about what is a disruptor or whatever, I think there's a lot of confusion out there about sort of what that means. And so maybe it's worth spending a couple of seconds talking about sort of what does disruption mean and what does it take to become a disruptor? I think you have to understand what disruption is in the first place. So I think, you know, there's it all starts with innovation. Like you said, you know, people are going to come out, they're going to do something different, they're going to do something innovative, and whether or not that innovative thing is accepted by the market and becomes something big or not is a question mark, but it all comes back to doing something different, right? Trying to innovate. And there's lots of different ways you can innovate. And I think this is true of bands, it's true of businesses. I mean, you can look at it from a very comprehensive perspective. There's many different ways to innovate. And I think when we think about the marketplace today, when you look at companies, a lot of that innovation we think of is what I'll call technology innovation, right? It's the new iPhone or it's the new whatever that's come out that's going to change our lives. VR goggles or the metaverse is the new thing, right? Or cryptocurrencies or what have you, right? There's lots of different ways to innovate from a technology standpoint, but there's lots of other ways to innovate, right? It's not just about how can I innovate from a technology standpoint. I can innovate in my business model. And again, we kind of saw that disruption in the music industry where the business model of the music industry got disrupted because of a technology innovation, MP3s, where you could actually copy and share these files around and they were much, much smaller than it would have taken normally, right? So we had this technology innovation that caused a huge disruption in the music industry. And the music industry was kind of forced to change its business model. So you can innovate from a business model standpoint, from a process standpoint, from a, you know, brand standpoint. There's lots of different ways to innovate. Now, most innovation, when you think about it, is what we call incremental innovation. So I'm going to take something and I'm going to make it better, right? And that's where probably, I don't have the official statistics, but I would wager that's about 99% of the innovation.
I love that. I'm just talking about, I love it because then what we get to do is we get to call ourselves disruptors or innovators, but I know this sounds snarky, but we're doing it in a somewhat safer way. Right. I mean, it makes sense versus going way out there. I'm sorry to interrupt, but the difference between innovation and incremental innovation versus this term disruptor, I like the way you're describing it because it sounds more accurate than I think what actually happened. So go ahead, continue. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No. I mean, that's great. That's a great viewpoint on it. Right. So incremental innovation is where most innovation happens. It's the easiest kind of innovation. It's the safest kind of innovation. And, you know, you see it every day, right? You see it in how bands evolve. You know, they'll go from one period to the next period of time and they'll add some incremental innovation to their music and they'll try some new things and do things that are different. And you also see it in the technology world, right? Every new iPhone or Android phone you buy, it's got a bit better camera and it has a faster processor and it's got a nicer screen or whatever it is. All of those things are incremental innovations. And you know, and that's where most of the innovation happens. And that's great. You know, that's fantastic. Disruptive innovation, on the other hand, is very, very different because what disruptive innovation tends to do is create entirely new markets or get us to think about the world in a very, very different way. So for instance, the difference between incremental innovation and disruptive innovation isn't always, you know, a bright line between the two, right? There's sort of shades of gray in there.
Yeah.
But like you could call the iPhone a pretty disruptive innovation, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah, there had been smartphones before, but it fundamentally changed the way we use these devices. We went from carrying around telephones to carrying around these supercomputers that are cameras and their MP3 players and their stream, you know, you can watch videos on them. I mean, it completely took the paradigm of the phone and kind of threw it on its ear. And then you had the app store come on. So now I could download all these really cool third-party apps and expand the capabilities of this device. So, you know, I'd argue the iPhone was a tremendous disruption in the marketplace. It was a disruptor. And so you have to think about it that way. Did it sort of create a new market, or did it come at a market from kind of the low end? So you see low end innovations come in into the market, and they gradually grow and grow and grow in capability until they just take over an entire market. So, you know, I spent years working for Red Hat Software, and Red Hat had this thing called Linux, which was this, you know, kind of hobby operating system back in the late 90s. And they slowly added capabilities to this thing over and over and over until it finally took over the entire Unix market. And so you see disruptions happen from very different angles, right? They can very quickly create new markets, or they can come at a market that's already existing and basically just cannibalize the whole market by coming from the low end. They're much, much cheaper products typically, or much, much cheaper solutions, but they tend to grow over time into something that's still a lot less expensive. But, and now we've taken over the market because the capabilities have grown tremendously. So I think it's worth looking at it from those perspectives, that disruption can happen in an incremental way, or innovation can happen in an incremental way. It can also happen in a disruptive way. And one of the real distinctions between those two things is, you know, did it either create a new market in terms of the disruptive innovation, or did it take over a market by coming at it from a different angle?
All right. So, now you got me confused. I'm following you, but I as you're talking, you know, so funny, what I love about being in this podcast, we're talking business and my head is quickly trying to spin rock and roll. Like I'm trying to, like, I'm going down music, even though what we're talking about is business. So switch over to music again. Is there any true disruptors? Hasn't it always been somewhat incremental? I mean, I know that, you know, you go, well, rock or reverb or punk, but it feels like you can always trace it back to something incremental. And the iPhone was a really good example, but now I'm kind of struggling. How much true market disruption is there? Again, I understand about, digital music, but is there that much true disruption in the marketplace? And more importantly, like, should we be thinking as companies, even though we say we're going to be disruptors, should we really be thinking as incremental disruptors versus, I don't know, can you think of something that is a true market disruptor, or do we kind of end up there, you know, by doing incremental disruption?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's always going to be those shades of gray between those things, right? And I think that when you look at incremental innovation versus disruptive innovation, it really does come down to, you know, did it radically change an industry, or did it create an entire new industry? Right. So, I mean, you could argue that, you know, rock and roll music was an incremental innovation, but the way it changed the music industry was tremendous, right? It changed the music industry in so many different ways that it was almost unrecognizable. Right after the sort of rock and roll revolution occurred, or if you want to take punk rock or whatever sort of genre of music, right? It changed the way it changed the listening habits of people. It changed the dynamics of the marketplace. So I think it all comes down to, you know, when you're looking at it from an incremental versus disruptive standpoint, it's not so much the innovation itself that distinguishes incremental innovation versus disruptive innovation, it's how much of an impact did it have on the marketplace. And again, that marketplace could be the music marketplace, it could be the marketplace for, you know, airlines or whatever it is, but did it change them? Did it change it fundamentally? And I think that's the big distinction there. It's not so much about the innovation itself. Yes, you could have incremental innovations that all of a sudden became very, very disruptive in the marketplace that looked like incremental innovations in the beginning. But now these things have become, they've taken over entire markets. And that I think is what a lot of big companies are trying to do, is they're trying to say, what is the next big thing? And then you have startups coming in right. saying, I've got a very different take on this. And I have the advantage of the fact that I can move faster and I can innovate faster than maybe some of these big guys. I don't have as many resources, but I have the ability to move quickly. And moving quickly, a lot of times, is the is one of the success factors in disruptive innovation. How quickly can I get there?
So, all right. So if I'm a big company, and again, I think about bands, I'm doing great, right? We're doing great. It's a chaotic time, but we're bringing in revenue. We have the resources, if I'm a large company, to maybe not even adapt as much during a time of disruption, because we're still okay. What is my mindset about moving forward during this time? So again, I'm making this up because you talk about the big companies. I'm the Rolling Stones. I've been around forever. People are going to buy my stuff. They're going to listen to my stuff. It doesn't matter. I don't need to be a disruptor. If I'm a gigantic company, do I really need to be pushing it forward, or do I just need to make sure that, as we talked about in earlier shows, that I'm staying current enough that I don't slide back?
Well, yeah, and I think when you look at the Rolling Stones, for instance, I mean that's a great example of a band that innovated over 50 years, right? I mean, they kept innovating. They kept bringing new sounds and new techniques and new albums to market. Whereas a lot of bands, they were stuck in their one sound and they weren't ever going to expand beyond that sound. And there's thousands of bands like that you've never heard of because they never, you know, they never adapted. They never innovated, right? They had their one thing and they did it for a little while and they were the kind of one hit wonders or whatever. But they were sort of, you know, genre period type bands where once that little genre moved past them, they couldn't adapt and they couldn't continue to innovate going forward. Now, I think if you're, you know, so I think that's a good example of a band that incrementally innovated over time. They didn't just stop. They didn't just say, hey, man, we're who we are and we're not going to try to keep on innovating. They kept on innovating, or you know, we've talked about Rush in the past as well. Yeah. It just kept innovating, right? And it pissed off a lot of their fans. You know, they moved from kind of hard rock to synthesizers, then back into more hard rock. And so, you know, I think those bands that have the longevity, they've been incrementally innovating for a long, long time. And that's one of the things that helped them last for 40 or 50 or however many years. I think as a big company, you know, the question is, yeah, look, we're doing great. Our profit margins are fine, so on and so forth. You know, the reason those companies are doing well typically is that they have been incrementally innovating. And then the question becomes, well, do we want to do something very, very different? Do we want to go out and disrupt a market? And is that even something we want to try? And I think what we found through over the last 100 years or so is that, I mean, history is just littered with the corpses of big companies that, you know, didn't try to disrupt things. They just kept saying, no, things are good. It's always going to be like this. And, you know, you can look at these companies over and over and over throughout the years. And I think we've talked about on previous shows, you look at a company like Kodak that invented the digital camera. And they looked at it and said, wow, this could be a big disruptor, but our film business is so good that, and it's so, the margins on that are so good that we're not going to go disrupt that business. And so somebody else came in, took those ideas and disrupted that business. And eventually they filed for bankruptcy. I mean, I think it was something like 20 years ago. So I think as a big company, you always have to be thinking about how do I go out and not only be very, very well prepared to react to disruptions in the marketplace, but also be able to go out and push those disruptive innovations. And the mentality that you need, though, between sort of incremental innovation and disruptive innovation, it tends to be a very different mentality. So the incremental innovation, you get these short-term results, you see them on your bottom line, you see your company becoming more profitable or selling more stuff or increasing customer sat. They're very quick feedback types of things, right? I do it, I see some fairly immediate results of doing it, whereas disruptive innovation can take a lot longer. So I'm not going to see the results maybe tomorrow. I'm going to see the results maybe in a couple of years. And so I think you have to balance, as a big company, you have to balance the disruptive innovation with the incremental innovation. And you have to do both, though. Any company that thinks, well, we're just going to do this very small incremental innovation for the rest of time, probably won't be around in 20 or 30 years. And so that's the danger you run.
Okay, so two-part question. I'm blanking on every one of them, but I don't know why it comes to mind. Styx and Mr. Roboto, right? That's about the time when I left being a Styx fan. and I'm sure there's tons of other examples, right, where you're just like this powerhouse and you're going to come up with something creative and it's just not coming to mind, other ones. But, you know, Mr. Roboto came out and I was like, what? And I just, well, you used examples like Rush as well. But so where does a software company like Adaptigen come in on different mindsets? So I'm going to take the big risk and, you know, I'm going to risk it. I've got this great idea. It's called Mr. Roboto. It's going to be awesome. Here's what I need. Where does Adaptigen come in on the disruption side, if that's the mindset, whether it's incremental or market or whatever, versus what I know a lot of companies are dealing with right now, which is, look, disruption, non-disruption, we just got to make it work. How do you all help your companies on either the innovation side or, frankly, just the adaptation side?
Yeah, and a great question. And by the way, the whole Mr. Roboto, Kilroy Was Here album from Styx, that's when I got into Styx, right? Because I loved it.
Are you serious?
Yes, I loved it. Right? I'm a nerd, man.
I am so sorry that I've insulted you. And yet at the same time, dude, come on.
Come on.
Compared to like Pieces of Eight? I mean, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But it was just sort of my mindset, right? I've always been kind of a nerd, right? And so that album came out. I can't tell you the number of times I listened to that album, right? I loved it. But you're right. It was so different than anything that they had done before, right? But an amazing, I mean, if you look at the album sales on Kilroy Was Here, that was probably their best-selling album. I'd have to go look.
Yeah.
But I will bet you that was the, we'll have to go look it up on Wikipedia or whatever. I'll bet you that was Styx's best-selling album if you take out greatest hits collections and things like that, right? So they went a radically different direction, you know, heaps of synthesizers, completely this concept album, just, you know, really took a huge risk there. And I think for those guys, it paid off. I mean, I don't know what the album sales were again, but I'll bet you $5 that was their best selling or second best selling album in their whole history. So, you know, again, how do we help companies? You know, we do it in a couple of ways. And I think it's similar, right? One of them is we help remove barriers to innovation. You know, there are a lot of companies out there, and I think almost every company out there would love to go out and be a disruptive innovator. They would love to go out and truly change the marketplace and do amazing things and so on and so forth. The challenge is that if you've been in business for a while, you've gone out and put systems and processes and technologies and rules and policies and procedures and all this stuff in place to run your business in kind of a steady state business where there are these small incremental innovations occurring. And those are great. That's fantastic. But the whole system is set up almost like the government, right? It's designed to do things, but not move quickly, right? It's designed for scale. It's designed for, you know, hopefully it's designed for relative efficiency at scale. But what typically the mindset and all the systems and processes and technology, all of those things are designed to support the scale. And now you're trying to come at a market and go after something entirely new. Now you've got the opposite of that problem, right? You've got the opposite of scale. I'm actually trying to scale this up from almost nothing. And now I'm going to end up in a situation where I've got to go out and grow it rapidly. I have to think very, very differently. And I don't need sort of the bureaucracy. I don't need all of the processes and rules and so systems and so on and so forth. Those things get in my way, right? So one of the things we do is we help companies remove some of the barriers to innovation through technology, right? To be able to leverage those things that they have in place that are designed to help them execute at scale and leverage them in a way where they can go out and try to disrupt new markets and do things very, very quickly, very rapidly. And that's really what our big differentiator in the marketplace is don't take 6 months to do something. We can do it in 6 days of what you were trying to do in 6 months. And that gives you the ability to move rapidly. And we talked about that earlier, right? It's the companies that can move quickly to take advantages of changes in the marketplace. Those are the ones that typically go out there and become the disruptive innovators. Because, you know, we talked about this earlier, the idea of where there's change, there's always opportunity for someone, right? Mm-hmm. If we lived in a static world, there would be no opportunity for anybody except, you know, the people that own all the companies, right? And the companies would execute along and they would have their profit margins and so on and so forth. But in a static world, there's very little opportunity to go out and really disrupt. But in a rapidly changing world, that creates huge opportunities for bands, for companies, for organizations, what have you. Where there's change, there's always opportunity, but there's also some downsides, right? A lot of disruptive innovations destroy existing competencies. Right? It's a completely new world when you start looking at the world from an innovation standpoint. They create new competencies, they create new opportunities, but they also destroy opportunities. And you want to be on the, you know, you want to be on the creation side of that rather than the destruction side of that.
That's right. That's right. Well, we've got to stop here because we're running out of time. But man, I think we need to cover this in our next podcast, in our next show. I'm sorry. I got podcasts on my shows. We need to cover this because I feel like we're just doing the starting point, right? Which is the adaptation of disruption. But you've talked about this is how do you sustain that and create lasting market change? Got the Beatles in my mind, Revolution. I know we're going to cover that on our next show. So that's all the time we have though for this show. So thank you everyone for joining us on Adapt to Perish with Dr. Alex Ebline and myself, Dr. Josh Claypo. Stay tuned to the Tony Curry Radio Network so that you are able to hear the episode of Adapt or Perish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.